Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. When children stand before judges in immigration court, they are not guaranteed legal representation. According to the Office of Refugee Resettlement, since October of last year, 68 unaccompanied minors have been released to sponsors in South Dakota. But that is just part of the story. Tanisa Islam is an immigration attorney and executive director of South Dakota South Dakotans for Peace. She joins us today to talk about kids, immigration law, and what happens to these kids in court and after. Tanisa, welcome to the Sioux Falls studios. Nice to have you.
Thank you. It's so beautiful here. I love it.
So I'm losing the name of the author who was on, and that was the first time I had ever heard that kids, that you don't get the sort of legal representation that we expect in America when you're picked up at the border. And that means a two-year-old can stand in front of a judge by themselves. And that has happened, according to that author at the time. Explain a little bit more about that process.
Sure. I think, there's so many ways that we could go. But, you know, oftentimes you hear about the right to have an attorney. And if you think of, you know, my favorite show, Law and Order, and when they do Miranda rights, if you can't afford an attorney, then an attorney will be appointed to you. That's really only in a criminal context. So people who are crossing the border are actually violating civil law, and so they do not get the protections of our constitutional amendments to access to an attorney being appointed to them. And so we have two kind of phenomenons that often get mixed together right now. One is unaccompanied minors who are traveling on their own without their parents or a guardian and coming to our border. And so that's who we're talking about right now. And that is a very different situation from families who were separated at the border and now have been in the reunification process, and that policy no longer exists as well.
So how do children who were unaccompanied and were crossing the border by themselves end up in South Dakota?
Sure. So, you know, this really hit the news, if you will, back in 2013. And I had just moved to South Dakota and opened up my private practice. And I started receiving phone calls from the Sioux Falls Public School Districts, actually, school liaisons there, asking me if I knew why all of a sudden they were starting to see children who were in their schools from El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras. And I said, yep, I think what's happening at the southern border is impacting us here in South Dakota now. So what essentially happens is when a child comes to the border and turns themselves into Customs and Border Patrol, which the overwhelming majority of people who are crossing the border do, they don't just run through. If they say some special words, if you will, when a CBP official picks them up, it triggers this process for asylum hearings. Also, with children have special protections in this process, and so they're not allowed to be detained under the Flores Settlement Agreement for more than 20 days. And so that places a huge burden on the government to get children out of a detention-like facility. And the average stay, I think, is much more than 20 days in a detention facility for children. So if children identify a family member, oftentimes they're actually fleeing violence and poverty and all the things their parents had fled and left their children behind with grandparents or aunts and uncles. They're actually fleeing to be reunited with a parent. So oftentimes if a child identifies a family member or someone close that they have a relationship with, those people go through a background check and now are considered a sponsor of that child. So that child will get shipped to the sponsor and to await their immigration court proceeding. So it's really important to also understand all of these children who are crossing into our country and being detained, they are now in immigration court proceedings. So that's how we have, since fiscal year 2013, a total of 433 unaccompanied minors from Central America who've been released to a sponsor here in South Dakota.
Now, their locations are confidential because these kids might have been trafficked. I mean, we don't know their individual stories. Once they're here, how long does it take them to go through this immigration proceedings process?
Yeah, that's a great question. Their locations are confidential unless, of course, there's an attorney involved. And it's important to understand that immigration court for North Dakota, South Dakota, and Minnesota is regionally based. It's actually located in Fort Snelling, Minnesota, in the Twin Cities area. So now think of all of the barriers of actually getting children to their immigration court hearing dates. I've been able to work with some fantastic organizations in the Twin Cities who have assisted us in having video conference hearings actually at the federal courthouse here in Sioux Falls, which started as a test, I believe, in 2015 and continues. So if a child has a lawyer, they can show up to the federal courthouse here in Sioux Falls instead of traveling all of the way to Fort Snelling for their first appearance. And those are some technicalities, but a huge burden has been relieved by having that. And so children have all of these barriers to get to immigration court. And so one of the things that we're doing at South Dakota Voices for Peace is we have a group of volunteers who have come together to understand where we can make the most impact on this issue in South Dakota. And currently, a child has to pay for an attorney to take their case. And, you know, I oftentimes say there's only 7 immigration lawyers in our state that we know of. And it shouldn't be the 7 of us's burden to represent the over 400 children who are here. And so we need to hire some more attorneys who are getting paid to do this work. And so that's what we're doing at Voices for Peace right now. Our new initiative is to hire a full-time attorney and legal support staff so that we can assess these children's cases. Make short-term advice all the way to full representation and work with partners in the Twin Cities to help us with that.
How important during that process of representing a child is it to figure out that story, which they might have a hard time articulating, remembering, understanding? There's a lot happening there. How important is it to really, in order to really represent them to your best ability, you need to know what actually is going on?
Yeah, absolutely. It's critical. I mean, as an attorney, if we don't have the full story from our clients, it's we're not well equipped, the best equipped to represent them fully. And so you had asked, how long do these cases usually take? It can take years, which is really difficult because kids are transient too. You know, they can move from this state to the next state. They might not fully comprehend the importance of showing up to their immigration court hearings. If they don't show up, they may get a removal notice, otherwise known as a deportation notice, for just not showing up. So all of these things need to be communicated to, you know, 12, 13, 7, 8, 14-year-olds, kind of across the spectrum. So there's definitely a lot of hurdles, but there's also statistics now are showing us that children are showing up to immigration court. You know, people who are in immigration court proceedings, the overwhelming majority show up to their court proceedings because they want to stay here. They don't want to be removed. They just trekked 5,000, 3,000 miles on foot to get here to get relief from the situations that they're fleeing. And so it's really critical to educate our impacted communities on, you know, their obligations and showing up to court and finding a lawyer and helping them through that process. And so at Voices for Peace, that's where we hope we can become that hub for children in immigration court.
Is this something that you're raising money for? Is this something like, how are regular South Dakotans kind of being part of this conversation and helping children get the representation that they need?
The community support for this effort has been overwhelming. I mean, it's just been so amazing. It was really a year ago when the Families Belong Together rally took place. This was right when separation was happening and there was a national call to action. I believe we had 4 different rallies just in South Dakota. So after that rally, where over 400 people showed up here in Sioux Falls, a lot of the people that I trust and who I consider my mentors in town, we came together to understand the issue and to understand what can we do that would be more impactful than just to rally or to cut a check to the border for all of the facilities and the attorneys doing work there. And so our goal right now is to raise $170,000 to hire the appropriate staff to serve these children in immigration court. We have a group of 20 volunteers that have been meeting for the last year to launch this project and to start fundraising. And I'm really excited to be able to share with you that we've already raised $110,000 in less than a year through private events, through community events, restaurant rising events, and just individual donations. And so it's been overwhelming to see the support that South Dakotans have given and understanding that and feeling so moved by understanding that children don't have representation in immigration court. We also now have statistics that show that if kids show up to immigration court on their own, 90% will lose their case and be returned to the country they just fled. So it's so critical to get an attorney for these children and to have our communities know that now we have an attorney that has a specialized knowledge at Voices for Peace that can help with these cases. Are we going to serve all the kids? No, but it's better than what we have right now, which is kind of a loose structure of volunteer attorneys taking cases. So we, it's just been great. It's been a lot of work, but we're really hopeful that we'll be able to get to our goal and hire an attorney by the end of the summer.
When you say that 90% of kids lose their case if they show up without representation and are sent back to explain what that could mean for them. And in some of the stories that you've heard, what can that mean for their lives?
Yeah, I mean, it's really important to understand that it's so hard as Americans to understand the violence that these children are facing in their home countries. I mean, Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador, that is called the murder triangle of the world. I mean, per capita murders that are happening are astronomical rates. So it's just something we can't fathom until you hear these stories from these kids' mouths on the danger that they face on a daily and a constant basis. So what ends up happening is if these children lose their case and the judge orders them to be removed, otherwise known, commonly known as deportation, they get on a plane and they're sent back. And now we have several major news agencies that have reported that children who are coming back or people who are getting sent back are getting murdered by the gangs who've been trying to recruit them. And so... the stakes are very high, you know, fleeing violence, the type of violence that these children are fleeing is very real. The threats are really real. The lawlessness is very real. So it becomes even more urgent when it comes to children to try to assist them in the best way that we can.
What are some of the ways and some of the scenarios that some of these children stay? How you know, when the court proceedings go in their favor, what are some of the markers that say you can stay if this is part of your story?
Sure.
You can stay if that is part of your story.
Well, in general, every case is a case-by-case basis, sure. Right? So there's several different options for relief from removal is what we call it. And so one of the major options is called asylum. And so when you're in immigration court proceedings, you basically have to defend yourself and why you shouldn't be removed. So that proceeding is called defensive asylum. And so for children, it's a non-adversarial application, actually. So they apply to the government, which is USCIS, and they wait for their application to be adjudicated, and they will be interviewed more often than not on their scenario. So in an asylum case, children have to prove that the harm, the violence that they face is particular to them, and that the government won't do anything about it. So you can imagine how high of a burden it is to represent these children in an asylum case, and it's almost impossible for them to do it on their own, if you will. Another another kind of big pot, if you will, of relief comes in the form of special immigrant juvenile status. And another critical point to this is that only children under 18 in most jurisdictions are eligible for this. So that's why it's even more exigent to find these kids that are in our communities so they don't age out of this type of relief. So in that case, there's a family law kind of court component as well as an immigration law component. Again, completely impossible for children to navigate on their own.
It seems every day there is another, conversation, whether it's a national conversation or a state conversation where people are talking about what's happening at the border. Congressman Dusty Johnson went down to look at things himself and was tweeting about it. How does, the rhetoric and the desire to, create meaningful reform so that there's some kind of relief of what's happening in people's lives, how does that impact what's happening here in South Dakota? That's kind of a vague and big question, but I sort of want to tie this into this notion of the politics of this.
The rhetoric just makes the work that we are trying to do so much harder, right? The rhetoric is so based in fear, and it's not based in fact. And when fear-based, factless information is disseminated over the airwaves or in print, it's very difficult to have really honest conversations about these issues. Clearly, as a nation, we want secure borders. But the question really right now is, how can we do that humanely? What is the moral purpose of our country? When we look at our history of immigration, what was the moral purpose of allowing different groups of people in or excluding them? We like to talk about how our country is a country of immigrants, and that doesn't take into account our indigenous populations when we phrase that. But our immigration laws are laws of exclusion. They're very based in racism and excluding certain types of people from our country historically. So with the rhetoric, it's really hard not to believe that the same is happening now. The groups of people that we're seeing at our borders are not the same as the 80s. The 80s we saw men coming and looking for work, and so they were called economic migrants. So some of the rhetoric you'll hear is these are people just want better jobs. In fact, that's not the case. As a parent, I'm a parent. I have two young kids. I can't imagine what conditions there would need to be for me to send my 8-year-old on his own for a better life and hope he makes it to the border. Mm-hmm. So again, like the individual stories and understanding the humanity of what's going on with these civil war crises, violence, abject poverty, foreign policy that's impacting these migrants to come to our border. So if we want to have an honest conversation about it, I think we need to start with some basic facts, kind of have ground rules on where we're going to start. But it makes our job much harder. But I think for most people, and we're seeing this in our community, that just not having the facts on children in immigration court, right? And what that looks like, what that feels like, what kind of dangers these children are facing, and how we can help as a community. So that's really what we've taken on at Voices for Peace, is educating the public on the issues and then figuring out where we can have most impact.
I want to make sure we get to talk to a few other issues that might be on your radar. And one is this notion of again, switching off of immigration court to civil case interpreters here in Minnehaha County. Tell me a little bit about what's happening there.
Sure. So I received some information that as of May 1st, the Minnehaha County is no longer funding, I would say, about 95% of interpreters in civil court proceedings. They are keeping interpreter funding for criminal court, but not for civil court. So I consider civil court to be our daily lives. You know, that's the divorces, evictions, property issues, traffic tickets. And I'm trying to meet. I went to the county commission meeting yesterday just to observe and hopefully talk to some decision makers, as well as talk to the county auditor on how this decision was made. So I'm kind of just in my research phase, just because I didn't know this was happening. Many of us didn't know it was happening until it went into effect. But not having interpreters, I don't know how you administer justice. If a party, one party, you know, a plaintiff and defendant, one party can't explain their side, or maybe both parties can't explain their side. So this is a real critical issue in terms of meaningful access to justice. And so I hope that we can have some innovative conversations on how to find more funding, because it's pivotal for our judges to be able to have interpreters to make decisions.
Yeah, from the judge's perspective alone, how in the world would you even approach that case if you couldn't ask a question and have it answered in a meaningful way?
I have some emails out to a couple of judges that I know to see if they'd be willing to talk, because it's a very serious issue.
Yeah. And then let's talk a little bit about, when we mentioned language, there was legislation in the South Dakota state legislature this past session that did not pass about driver's license tests being provided in Spanish. And Speaker of the House, Stephen Haugard, expressed some concerns, which I'm sure are not unique concerns. We've all heard this argument before, but I wanted to sort of get your perspective, which was, he said, you know, it's a dilution, you know, it dilutes culture. It keeps people from assimilating. It keeps people from, you know, really fully being South Dakotans if you, you know, kind of give them this extra tool. When you heard that, what were some of your first response? Did you hear those statements, and did they have an impact on you?
I did, actually. I was listening to that public comment period on the legislation online. I was mortified as a child of immigrant parents, as someone who grew up in a household where my first language was not English. I did not know English when I went to school until first grade. It's highly offensive to believe that there's only one culture in our state. Is highly offensive, first and foremost, to our indigenous population. And secondly, to the rest of us, if you will, who do not, I'm going to assume that Representative Haugard meant a white, Christian, English dominant culture as the one culture that doesn't need to be diluted. Listen, this is not, again, that's the rhetoric. This is about access. You know, we love to talk about how diverse Sioux Falls is becoming, but I'm having a really hard time with not talking about access to services. If we continue to grow a community and they have no meaningful access to city services, to county services, to driver's licensing exams, to the courts now, what are we doing? You know, we're basically sending a message to the entire world and to South Dakotans that if you will only be a full citizen of our state if you speak English. And again, I think that's archaic. It's not going to be for the health of our and prosperity of our community in any way. And so I hope we can move away from this racist rhetoric. It does nobody any good. And, you know, at Voices for Peace and our C4 arm, which is Voices for Justice, we empower impacted communities, immigrants, refugees, and Muslims to start really paying attention to this type of stuff, because there are a lot of us. You know, we're kind of a silent majority, if you will, in terms of these populations in our community. So to empower them to understand how pivotal it is to become engaged in these issues, that it's not just one or two of us that can be the voice for our very diverse communities, I think that's what it will take. And it will take our allies to stand up against this rhetoric too, and to create meaningful access to all of these services so our communities can go to work, they can go to school, they can buy a house. I mean, the trickle down of having though I hate to use that phrase, the trickle down of having a driver's license is amazing. You know, I have young people that I work with who have shared with me that they've failed the driver's licensing test 5 times. They speak English. They just don't comprehend it at the same level as that they can speak it. So that's, you know, speaking English and being integrated is not the issue when it comes to testing. When it comes to testing, it's about comprehension of the language, right? Mm-hmm. You don't have to comprehend a green light in English. You can comprehend a green light in several different languages as well, right? But it's just, for me, it's an issue of access again. Like if we don't provide meaningful access to our, what I call multilingual communities, we are going to see those populations leave. And I fear that the diversity that we see in our public school districts, when they're ready to go to college, they'll be like, we're out of here because we're not welcomed. We're not actually included. People love to talk about that 186 languages and the percentage now is 60% ethnically diverse in some schools, but no one's including these populations and providing access to critical services.
Tanisa Islam, come back again. South Dakota Voices for Peace. Where do people find that online if they want to learn more about your organization?
You can Google us, and our website is sdvfpeace.org.